You are Locked On the NFL, your daily NFL podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Well, hello, hello, hello. I am Matt Williamson. This is the Locked On NFL Podcast. And as we often do on Tuesdays, we are talking draft. And no one better to do it with than Joe Marino. He is one of the hosts of Draft Dudes that is also on the Locked On Network. He's also the host of Locked On Bills. So you're all over the Locked On Network, brother.
Hey, I like talking football. So as many couple gigs there that play into what I love to talk about, the Bills and the NFL draft. And obviously doing that on a daily basis is fun. And it's really cool to be on the network with you.
Yeah, man. It's been a little while since we've chatted. I think since then, and I go to the site every day, the Draft Network. You are one of the founders of the draftnetwork.com. Tell everyone a little bit about that, and also mention the mock draft tool people can use for their favorite teams. Now, that's a really cool feature. I think it's really booming.
Yeah, I'm really excited to be part of the Draft Network. The CEO and founder is JC Cornell, and he brought in Trevor Sikkema, John Ledger, who hosts the Lockdown NFL Draft podcast, myself and Kyle Krabs from Draft Dudes, and really put together a website that we think is totally comprehensive for covering the NFL draft, and obviously on a year-round basis, and really exciting with our content and obviously the podcast that we feature. But like you mentioned there, the mock draft machine, where people can go on to it and simulate the mock draft, and they can be the general manager for their favorite team and make the selections while the rest of it's simulated. But you can pick as many or as few teams as you want. So if you want to control a couple of different teams, you can. Or if you want to just control one, you can. And the rest of the draft is simulated based on our algorithm that takes into account team needs and players on the board. And we think it's just a great experience and have really loved, like, my Twitter mentions right now are just literally nonstop people sharing screenshots of mock drafts from the mock draft machine, and we talk about it. So it's really fun and engaging, and allows people to go on and be the expert and make the picks and create some good discussion.
Yeah, and I have the site up now. We're going to talk off the ball linebackers based off your guys' rankings. And there's way more on the site than the mock draft feature, folks. I mean, there's new articles up every day. First, though, remember to get this show every day. Subscribe to Locked On NFL on the new Himalaya podcast app. In the expanding podcast world, you need Himalaya with their personality, curated playlists, and new features every day. Download Himalaya at your app store and subscribe to Locked On NFL. So, Joe, this linebacker class, and I got to admit, I'm looking through it a little bit through Steeler-colored glasses here, considering the needs that my favorite team has, seems extremely top-heavy with the two Devons, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's the toast of this year's linebacker class. Devin Bush from Michigan, Devin White from LSU, and the Steelers at 20. I get nervous about them being in play there, because I think as early as the Buccaneers at 5, and then you've got a lot of landmines with you know, Denver and Cincinnati and Washington, and I mean, even
Giants.
Detroit maybe. The Giants.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot.
There's too many spots, and the fact that I think that this off-ball linebacker class – overall is pretty poor outside of those two. And so if you want to get a true impact guy, you better get one of the two Devons. This isn't last year where there was, what, I think we had 5 first round off ball linebackers. This isn't 2018 when it comes to the crop of backer prospects.
Right. And then Leonard went early in the second round, and he was as good as any of them.
Fred Warner as well in the second.
Right. Right.
Really
great
good,
point.
Good year. Yeah.
Good point. And along those lines, I mean, just looking what Mosley and Quan Alexander made in the open market, it used to be, you know, this was kind of a dime or dozen position, and people are spending immense amount of money on linebackers that can do everything. I mean, on the field, every down type guys. You don't get these guys at a bargain rate anymore. And just one, you know, Steeler note, like going into the combine, my Steeler show, I would often say, maybe or maybe not, I'd take Bush at 20. And then after the combine, it's like, I think you got to trade up to get him.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good point you make there, Matt. I think that the NFL is changing a ton. And I mean, like, even safeties and centers, those guys didn't get paid before. They're getting paid now. And linebacker is certainly one of those spots where, you know, the way that NFL offenses are playing with pace and space and really spreading guys out, there is such an onus on having guys that have range but have quick triggers and can cover ground and can win in pass coverage. And so the demands on the second level players, I think, are higher than they've ever been, and how important they are to be neutralizers and not be mismatch liabilities if guys can't move or, you know, can't tackle. So I think that the skill set is certainly something that's more valued now than ever.
Yeah. And it's funny because looking at this draft, I've done some mock drafts, and Tampa at five is kind of an odd spot. Like, there's not a slam dunk, you know, guy there, because you think that the top defenders are gone, probably a quarterback's gone. And I do think White might end up as early as five. And we had Q on yesterday from Locked On Raiders, and he was saying if they don't get Quinn and Williams, he might vote for Devin White at four. It may kind of make him the face of a defense.
Yeah, and it's been a while for the Raiders since they've really had a truly, like, standout long-term fixture there on the second level. So that would make sense. I mean, obviously, I think Josh Allen, the edge rusher from Kentucky, is probably in play, where they need a lot of help on the edge as well. But, yeah, I think Tampa Bay, like, probably it's been a problem for them over the last few years, defense overall. And, you know, they've had really good offenses. And, you know, I think they've been in the top 10 the last 2 years in offense, but they just can't get the defense right. And they've made some investments. They've made some draft picks, but having that true quarterback of the defense, that guy, that enforcer on the second level, I mean, you get that in Devin White pretty much right away. I love his game tape. I don't think he's without flaw. I mean, there's some times where he's a little reckless. He makes some misreads where he'll take himself out of plays by just not reading his keys correctly and have some whiffs in space. But by and large, you watch this guy's tape, and there are just moment after moment where you're like, that guy's going to be a star.
Yeah.
And I think that's the type of player that Tampa can really use in the middle.
Yeah, no doubt. They lost Alexander, and David's not a young guy anymore. And like you said, there's so many landing spots after them, you know, Denver and tons of them. That's where I was going to go next, though. I mean, these two aren't flawless prospects, though. I mean, obviously, they both are very fast. They're very explosive. They tested very well. Their tape's very impressive. But I assume you prefer White to Bush. And what worries you, if anything, about either?
Well, I touched a little bit on White's issues there with just not necessarily always keying and diagnosing correctly. Now, he's got some recovery speed, but, you know, look, there's times where he just takes himself out of plays but with bad reads. There's some times where he's a little reckless in space, where he doesn't come to balance and he'll whiff on tackles. For Devin Bush, it comes down to length for me with him. And I think there's probably less issues in terms of bad reads on film with Devin Bush, but he has some restrictions with his length, where when he really needs to disengage from blocks, or he, you know, make tackles outside his frame, I think that's two areas where that length does show up on film. And I know there's, to me, issues are only issues if they're issues, right? And the fact is, I did see issues with him shedding blocks and being able to really extend his tackle radius. So those are the two things that come to mind with both of the Devins in terms of where they aren't perfect, if you will.
Sure. And I would assume with Bush, too, and maybe to a slightly lesser degree with White, 6'5 tight ends streaming down the middle of the field are going to be a problem, too, just the length of them.
Yeah, I mean, those are problems for everybody, probably more so from Bush, but I think he was good in coverage. I really like him as a shallow zone defender. There was a couple reps in the Ohio State game where he gave up some space, but one time he was asked to carry Paris Campbell across his field on a drag route. Nobody's doing that. So, you know, I do, yeah, I mean, he doesn't necessarily have the length that you're looking for, but I think he's really good in terms of anticipating routes to his zone, and he's got the mobility to run with guys. But, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, when the ball's arriving, there's discrepancies there with what he has in terms of length versus some of the tight ends he's going to have to cover.
All right. Those two at the top seem pretty well entrenched, and most lists I see, including yours at the Draft Network, have Mac Wilson as the third off-the-ball linebacker. What's the problem with him, though? Like, I mean, I've watched him, and he doesn't flash like these guys, but I also think he might be getting a little bit of the short end of the stick in terms of what he could become.
I agree with you. I think that you see a lot of the high-level stuff that you get from the Devins in Mac Wilson just at a much less consistent basis. And I think that some of the issues that I mentioned there with Devin White, with some bad keys and being a little bit reckless in space, I think you get that at an accelerated pace with Wilson, who's actually only a 17-game starter. So it doesn't necessarily come in with a ton of experience with a lot of what I would call kind of a mixed bag on tape. And obviously he's not the athlete or anywhere near the athlete as those other guys. But yeah, he really good moments in coverage, like his ability to win in coverage, which is really important. He can cover ground. And I think he gives you a nice skill set. I just don't think we're talking top-tier level like Devin Bush, Devin White.
You think he could be an every-down guy?
Yes. Yeah. I don't have any questions with that. He could play into the line of scrimmage really well. He's got good lateral range and coverage. I mean, even he might be he's probably right up there in terms of man coverage upside as those other guys. So I think he certainly gives you three down ability.
Okay. I mean, to me, he seems like a top 50 guy, mid-second round type player.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Okay. Leading into the process, Terrell Hanks was getting a lot of buzz. And I think it's safe to say that postseason workouts have not been kind to this young man.
Yeah, I always thought it was a little bit crazy. I did his tape pretty early in the process,
mm-hmm.
and it's one of those things where you do the eval early, and then there's some hype, and you're like, oh man, what'd I miss? And then you're like, okay, I had this one. A safety convert. He played a lot as an overhang guy, a lot of like what we saw from Fred Warner at BYU, a lot from like the Miles Jack role at UCLA as well. And he's a converted safety, and you can tell he's new to the position because his key and diagnose skills are wild. So
yeah.
I liked him in a pursuit style role where, you know, just see ball, chase ball type stuff. But, you know, even with, you know, with his testing, I mean, there was some comments that he maybe had like a hamstring issue or something. I watched the 40, didn't look like he had any problems at all. He just was slow. I think that was really disappointing. And so, you know, you're looking for like baseline speed out of guy that can win in a pursuit style role, and you don't really get that from Hanks. I mean, he's chiseled as can be. I mean, this guy looks like a perfectly sculpted man there at the Senior Bowl, but you know, he doesn't quite move like you would expect for his frame and build.
Yeah, and I'm not going to harp on the negatives, but there's one guy on this list that's very, very low. He's your 219th player overall.
Got to change that.
Oh, you guys are okay. that's Jermaine Pratt from NC State. Okay. Because that stuck out like a sore thumb to me, because I'm sitting here thinking, well, what if the Steelers don't get somebody at 20? Maybe you get Pratt on the second day, and then I'm looking down your list, and he's nowhere to be found. So tell me about him, or is he just late to the tape on you for you guys?
No, I think this is just a matter. This is an oversight on our behalf. We probably need to spend more time updating this, to be honest with you, especially as new information comes along. But I like Pratt a good bit.
Oh, good. Okay.
Really good play. Like what I like about Pratt is I did probably seven NC State games in terms of like going there and being credentialed for NC State games over the last 2 years. And you watch him in 2017 and he didn't start, but he played a ton in sub packages and he popped play after play after play. You're like, this guy needs to play more. And you know, there were some seniors in front of him and he finally got that chance in 2018 to be like the face of that defense. And while the defense wasn't very good, he was really good. He filled up the stat sheet. He does everything. I really like his urgency, like there's an intent about the way he plays the game, playing into the line of scrimmage, in pursuit, playing through contact. I love that about him. He'll sift through. He'll get his arms involved. His background as a safety really shows up in coverage, which is really important. He's a guy that I don't have to worry about on third downs. There's times, I mean, he's interesting because he's a bigger linebacker, but he doesn't have a lot of length. And that does show up a little bit when he's asked to stack and shed. And a little bit with tackles, but I think he's a perfectly good tackle. But I think that, you know, this is probably a guy that, you know, if you're looking for, you know, middle of day two.
Consolation prize.
Yeah, oh, a heck of a consolation prize. Yeah. I like him a lot. Really, really good demeanor about him, too, that I feel like you can really plug him, and he has that mentality and makeup of a second-level defender.
Would you consider him over Mac Wilson?
Yeah, I think he's in that conversation. Okay. I don't think it's that crazy of a drop off to me, especially with Mac Wilson. There's been some stuff that's come out about that, you know, his personality and how he
too,
responded to team stuff. Yeah, so you've heard that type of stuff too, and where like you probably get everything minus that from Pratt, and you know, maybe that's a reason to vault him over him.
Yeah, it sounds like his arrow's going up, Pratt.
Yes.
Yeah. The next two guys you have on the list, and again, maybe this does need updated, but Joe Giles-Harris and Blake Cashman. I mean, Cashman makes a ton of plays and tested better, I think, than all of us expected.
Yeah, I like Cashman. He's a guy that went from preferred walk-on to team captain, and he plays like it, man. He is one of those dudes that's just a dog on the second level, can cover ground, really like him in coverage. But he's not necessarily the biggest linebacker, but that dude will take on any block, and he'll look to put guys right back into holes, and very urgent football player. And I didn't see a whole lot of issues with processing either. So I think he's very fast to flow. Some issues where he will, you know, that misdirection type stuff, he can get kind of has, you know, stuck in his tracks a little bit, but overall, his comfort and space and spatial awareness is really good. Love his range, love his coverage upside. A really controlled tackler, which is good. You know, a lot of these guys, they kind of come in hot and out of control and
sure.
don't really come to balance. But you don't see that from Cashman, who moves really well and comes in with intent. So there's a lot to like about Cashman, and he's one of those, again, one of those day two guys that, you know, you feel comfortable with and feel like you can really get a guy that can help you right away.
Do you think he has a chance to maybe be an every down player?
I don't know why you wouldn't. I mean, to me, I think he's fine. I mean, I don't necessarily want him playing downhill, like right into the line of scrimmage and all the time and having to really like, kind of like be a Mike and really be a B-gap to B-gap guy or C-gap to C-gap guy. I like him in a pursuit style role a little bit more, but, you know, his coverage ability doesn't, I don't have any questions there. So pursuit style role against the run, and he can fill zone or man duties in passing downs.
Yeah, and we're going to talk Bills in the final segment, and part of that reason is because this linebacker class, after the names we've mentioned, there's not that much to talk about. I mean, I just saw Lance Zierlein put out a list of best to worst position groups, and his off-the-ball linebackers were last. I mean, it seems like it's really dry at this point. I mean, obviously outside the top two, but really outside the top four or five in terms of who are starters. Is there anyone that jumps out at you that is worth mentioning that, boy, I kind of have an eye on this guy?
If Drew Tranquil, the Notre Dame linebacker, didn't have the injury history that he has, I could really get behind him. Played really well at the Senior Bowl, really good football character. People rave about his work ethic and the way he's wired, which is really important. But his injury history is just so concerning. But otherwise,
is it like an Anzalone type of deal?
That's kind of the one for one, and they both have nice hair as well, so it works out there. So
very good. If we picked another position group, we probably could have a more in depth conversation. But folks, I mean, linebackers, this just goes to show you, are really at a premium, and the supply does not meet the demand right now. So we know what that means. I mean, a guy like Bush and White probably will go higher than most of us tend to think or thought a month or so ago. And free agency really showed us this. I mean, Mosley's making $17 million, and he's an above-average player, but he's not a superstar. So that's where the linebackers are. That's what the incoming class looks like. Joe, let's take a quick break and do a segment on the Bills.
Sounds good.
All right, we are back. And Joe, I don't think you and I have had this conversation, but I have a lot of respect for how the Bills are building. You know, that this, they realized from day one this was going to be a process. And I said some not so nice things about them when they got in the playoffs. Like, you know, they're not really a playoff team. They kind of fell into that. That being said, I think they're extremely well coached, and even that year maximized the minimal talent they had. And I really think that the building is being done right. You know, they're not putting the windows in before the foundation. You know, I mean, I thought last offseason was very much a Panthers-like offseason to get their Cam Newton and their Luke Kuechly in Allen and Edwards. And I don't know if those guys will pan out to that degree, but I think that's what their plan was. And then this offseason is, as we've seen with the Bears, the Rams, let's make our young franchise quarterback as comfortable as possible.
Yeah, no question about it, Matt. And I think, you know, the situation with the Bills and a lot of the teams in the AFC East over the last 20 years has been this scramble to try to compete with the Patriots. And there's constant turnover with general managers and head coaches. Meanwhile, the Patriots just keep winning the division. And so
the stress
on those three other teams in the division has just been really, really high. And you've kind of saw the Bills for years and years and years kind of kick the can, try to build up something to compete right away, and never really embraced a true, honest look at the situation and build the thing correctly. And finally, Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott have done that. And there's been some calculated decisions along the way. And yes, they did overachieve that first year. And I think that surprised everyone. And we're further away from it now. And even you kind of hear that from Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean this offseason, say, yeah, you know, that was great. But, you know, that it was somewhat
of a calculated.
And last year, you know, last year was a situation where the Bills are carrying $50 million in dead cap space because, you know, they clean the fat off the roster, and they're undermanned because of that. And so, you know, I look at a team like Miami. Miami's embracing a similar thing right now. But last year was somewhat expected just because they were undermanned. And now that you have $50 million in dead cap space off the ball in a situation, or off the cap, where you can actually invest in players to help your team. You saw the Bills be aggressive with, you know, they didn't go out and sign superstars or anything like that, but getting rosterable players. And it's refreshing to see that the Bills are going to have rosterable players and real competition at multiple spots on the team, more so than in previous years where it's like, hey, which UDFA is going to plug in and be the fourth corner? Well, now it's former first round pick Kevin Johnson or EJ Gaines to go, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just a lot more, the talent's just better. And so, some calculated decisions in the past, but you feel like you feel good about where they're heading, and as well going into the draft with 10 draft picks. So there's even more coming here in terms of improving this football team around Josh Allen.
Yeah, it is promising. And I have higher this time last year. I was not an Allen fan at all. I mean, I thought, boy, the accuracy's poor. I don't really trust him in the pocket that much. And he far exceeded my expectations.
Yeah. When he came back from that injury, and one thing to you got to talk about with Allen going into his season, and I wasn't very high on him going through the draft process either, is from day one that he walked in the building, it was a three-guy race between McCarron and Peterman to be the number one quarterback. And so he's getting 25-30% of the snaps going through the entire process as a rookie into a situation where the Bills are undermanned, extremely on offense, a ton of turnover on the offensive line where they just lost Cordy Glenn, Richie Incognito, and Eric Wood. And their top receivers are Kelvin Benjamin and Andre Holmes.
Right.
And that's
right.
What Josh Allen, who's a raw player, going into his first reps, getting 25% of the opportunities to get better, that's what he has around him. And so, yeah, it started off very poor. In those first seven games, it was everything I was afraid of with Josh Allen. And he even I thought that he limited a bad supporting cast. But then he got injured, which almost was like the best thing that happened.
Right, sit down.
Yeah, he got a chance to observe the job and see other guys get coached through it. Derek Anderson and Matt Barkley were brought in, a couple of veterans that have played in the league, and he has peers on the roster outside of Nate Peterman, right? That was the only other quarterback on the roster for a season. And then they cut Andre Holmes and they cut Kelvin Benjamin, and all of a sudden Robert Foster, who has some speed, and Isaiah McKenzie, who has some speed, it really improves the spacing of the offense. Josh Allen comes in like a man possessed and was really good towards the end of the season last year and really finished the season on a high note. And you get excited about him as the guy from day one with a much improved supporting cast about what he can become and what he can continue to evolve into.
Yeah. Your cohort, Trevor Sikkema, just put out a mock draft on the Draft Network, and he was on a couple weeks ago. He does great work, obviously, but at the 9 spot, and guys, there's a lot of mock drafts all the time on the site. You got to check that out. He has Christian Wilkins, who I have no qualms with that player going to the Bills or anywhere. But most people have some sort of pass catcher going at 9. Before free agency, you saw Metcalf all the time. And frankly, I have mixed feelings about him. I don't love his change of direction. But if I was a Bills fan, TJ Hawkinson would be my number one target. Where are you on that?
You know, I think tight end is very much in play for the Bills at number 9. As a matter of fact, Sean McDermott at the league meetings, he's just had his press conference and he was asked about tight ends and talked about how important it was for a young quarterback. But then he specifically said, he says, when I was in Carolina and we were faced with a 3rd and 5, I liked it because I knew we had Greg Olsen and I knew we were getting a first down. I mean, if that
right.
was an endorsement for what he thinks in terms of having a really good tight end, that, you know, that certainly speaks to it. And right now, the Bills went into the offseason with just Jason Kroom under contract. And right now, the only other two tight ends on the roster are Tyler Croft and Jake Fisher, who's converting from offensive line. So you don't feel too good about that situation. And certainly, you know, you'd love to give Josh Allen a bona fide weapon there at tight end. For me, though, Matt, when I think about the Bills at number 9, I'd love to get a tight end. I really would. I'm nervous about the defensive line, and not that they don't have a decent group, but who are the dudes? Who are the guys that teams have to game plan against? Who's going to win 1v1 consistently? Outside of Jerry Hughes, I don't have another name for you.
And I think people don't realize how valuable Kyle Williams was all these years too.
He was, but and even last year, I mean, Kyle in the last couple of years, he declined. His mm-hmm. role was good. He was a fine football player, but he wasn't what he was 5 years ago. So when you have Jerry Hughes as the only guy getting penetration, it's wasted. There's nothing up the middle. The quarterback can step up. He can flee to the opposite side because there's no complimentary rush. And so I think that the Bills need to make a concerted effort here, starting with this draft, hopefully with their first-round pick, and getting some dudes that are tough to block. because right now it's a couple, it's some fine players, but they need some playmakers up front to really make that a top tier defense.
So who do you have your fingers crossed for at nine?
Well, I mean, personally, I'd love to get a guy like Brian Burns. I'd love Ed Oliver.
Sure.
Those two guys really pop. I don't know if Josh Allen gets there, but he's certainly exciting.
I would think one of those first two would be there, though.
Yeah, I do. Here's the thing is the Bills, I really feel like they like prototypes, right? If you think about the players that Sean McDermott and has had at Carolina, the players that they've invested in are very much prototypes in terms of size and length, that type of thing. And so you've got Oliver, a 6'2", sub-290-pound defensive tackle with, you know, sub-32-inch arms. It might not be their guy. And then Brian Burns, who's 249. And we're happy that he's 249 because we thought he'd be lighter. So I get nervous that they don't really check those boxes. And so Christian Wilkins kind of does. And Christian Wilkins is a player that is, you know, he's been a big reason why Clemson's been so good lately. I mean, I think Dabo, he's tremendous. But Deshaun Watson and Christian Wilkins were the two pieces of that program that really took it to new heights. And he's a very accomplished guy. And really, you know, people rave about his football character, how hard he works. I've went to a ton of Clemson games here over the last few years, and Wilkins is on the friggin' field goal team. And when Clemson scores a touchdown, that dude's the first guy on the field to line up. And he's on the punt team as a senior, as an All-American senior. So I just feel like there's something about him that I just feel like the Bills are going to like. And if you said, hey, gun to head, who are the Bills picking at nine? I feel like they'd love to have Christian Wilkins.
He seems very safe, too. I mean, I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, I'd be really shocked if he busts.
Right, yeah. I mean, but that's the thing is, what type of a ceiling does that Oliver have, even though he doesn't meet those thresholds? And the tight end. Like, if you don't take that tight end at nine, you're kind of – I like this tight end class. I think it's deep. But who's, like, the guys that you really anticipate being a high-impact guy right away? We don't typically see that. And you actually don't see a lot of success in first-round tight ends in general. I mean, the best tight ends in the league, Jason Kelce or Travis Kelce and Zach Ertz, all these,
right.
Yeah, Gronk, none of those guys are first-round picks. So it's, you know, even a guy like O.J. Howard, who is one of the best tight end prospects we've seen come out, he fell to, what, 19? So it's projecting the valuation and success rate of tight ends is quite confusing.
Yeah, and rarely do they come in the league and make an impact. And it's also a very deep tight end class.
Right.
Folks, you all need to check out the Draft Dudes podcast, especially this time of year. I mean, I don't know why you haven't already if you aren't. And all you Bills fans or AFC East fans certainly need to check out Joe on Locked On Bills. Joe, where can they find you on Twitter, too?
At the Joe Marino.
Very, very cool. Folks, thanks for tuning in. And remember, you can subscribe to this show and the new Himalaya podcast app as well on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. And when you get in your car, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On NFL. I will be back tomorrow with Mark Schofield. I'm sure we'll have a little bit of Gronk talk there and some more quarterback talk as we've been doing. We got Sando coming back on Thursday. And I'm up for ideas for Friday, folks. So I will be back tomorrow. Thanks so much. Over and out.